And that moves us to report of other officers. And with that, Utility Director Hegerman will apprise the Assembly of a potential data center project and its benefits to the community. Andrew Mazzella of Mazzella Alaska LLC and Sam Anoka of CEO will also be available to answer questions. You've heard them talk earlier. And with that, I will turn it over to Director Hegerman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Appreciate the opportunity to talk tonight about a data center opportunity that's coming to Petersburg. This project is a private project. I hope that was clear by Andrew and Sam's testimony. The borough will be providing power to this project, but the deal, so to speak, is between two private parties. There exists a transformer that is unused right now, and Mr. Mazzella has been trying to come up with ideas to use that for the last year and a half, and landed on a data center opportunity after hearing what might be happening in Wrangell. So I just like to talk about this opportunity. Petersburg Power and Light is supportive of this project, and hopefully when I get done, you'll understand why. Better? Okay. So this is what we're talking about is a small scale, as Mr. Mazzella talked about, very small scale. It will fit in this room. The thing about this small scale data center is that it uses a consistent amount of power 24 hours a day. And that is what drives up the benefits, the financial benefits to the utility and to the borough and our customers. It does have benefits to private enterprise, of course. Mr. Mazzella has an empty facility right now. He bought the Ocean Beauty Cannery, not wanting to keep it empty. He wants to do something out there. And this opportunity will help him create some capital in order to do more things out there. So this is a good opportunity for him. GreenSpark is planning on starting at one megawatt level for the data center, proving it out locally, and then eventually building out to the full capacity of that transformer that Mr. Mazzella owns, 2 megawatts. The benefit also local benefits the local utility. And how that happens is that constant use of power injects more revenue into Power and Light. What we see in small communities and utility rates is that we have a very small customer base. And when costs increase, you know, we all see inflation rising costs on many different items in our budget. When those costs go up, that same small customer base has to shoulder those increases. A customer like this that is using a tremendous amount of power comparatively to other customers in Petersburg helps dramatically the rate picture and helps to exert downward pressure on any rate increases. And it also helps on a regional basis. I say in this paperwork that SEPA spilled 48,000 megawatt hours last year from Tidy Lake. That is a tremendous amount of power that went down the stream instead of into the turbine. The reason it went down the stream is because we didn't have customers signed up to use that power. If we're using power, we're not spilling. So it would be good for SEPA. What's good for SEPA? Keeps our wholesale power rate low. We don't have to increase that wholesale power rate, which not only helps Petersburg, but it helps Wrangell and it helps Ketchikan as well. So what is an edge data center? Again, it's a very small scale data center. Fit in this room. This project is up to 2 megawatts. It basically has the same footprint as a small retail shop, a modular shipping container, if you will. Very small. It does provide AI services to customers around the globe. I don't understand that part of the business. That is for Sam to figure out, but that is what it does. the economic benefits to Petersburg in a little more detail. They won't increase our utility rates. So the large data centers have gotten a very bad rap, and rightly so, because they do raise rates. The infrastructure that needs to go into those huge data centers is shouldered many times by customers. This situation is much different. The borough isn't paying a dime to set this up. This is all a deal between Mr. Mazzella and GreenSpark. All we're going to do is sell power. And through a service that is existing and not doing anything right now. The rate stabilization, the estimated revenue, gross revenue to Power and Light on a 2-megawatt project is upwards of $2.1 million a year. That's what that 24 hours a day of power use does. It adds up. And so that does exert market downward pressure on rates. We can't control inflation. You know, costs are going to go up no matter what. But the example that I put in here, I feel is pretty solid. Somebody with a $300 electric bill today, in 10 years from now, without any additional customers on the system, and using the rate study software that we employ at the utility, that bill is going to be $427 a month in 10 years. By adding a 2-megawatt data center and spreading out those fixed costs that are rising every year to a customer that uses a lot of power, that bill, that $300 bill, is going to be $362. So that's a savings of $65 a month or $780 a year. And that's, you know, that's not anything that we should ignore. It's very rare that any utility that I've been involved with in Petersburg sees an opportunity to have a downward pressure on rates. They're always going up. Costs are always going up. And with that small customer base, it unfortunately falls to the customers to pick up those increases. These small data centers do offer jobs, not very many, 1 to 2 probably in this situation, because it is a small, very small facility. But they do create opportunity for electricians, HVAC folks, contractors. And the company GreenSpark is focused on local hire for any permanent positions. They don't want to add to any housing issues that we have by bringing in new people that can't find housing. So finding, you know, locals that can support this project and be employees is where they want to go. This project is, it will be a quiet and discreet operation. The servers are air-cooled primarily, but they are inside of a building, so they're not, you know, out in the open like a refrigeration compressor is. They're quiet. Being inside of a building helps that dramatically. The industrial zoning, you know, of the location that we're talking about also allows this kind of activity anyway. So it is definitely not going to be louder than a cannery, you know, operating full bore in the middle of summer. Resources needed for data centers also is a large issue that people talk about. The power usage that we're talking about here, again, Sam mentioned it. We're talking about stranded power, power that's not being used right now, an empty facility, a large transformer that is not doing anything. So using that power to benefit all of Petersburg, I think, is a good result. Water usage also comes up in the data center conversation. These units are going to be air-cooled primarily, but they do have the capacity for water cooling. But the important thing to note is this is not a steady stream of water. This is a closed-loop system. So they charge the system, and that's all the water they need. It just circulates, cools off, heats up, cools off, heats up, cools off, and cools those servers. So there's no ongoing draw to the water system in Petersburg. No negative impacts there. On the safety and health front, There's no, these centers don't emit any harmful radiation or odors. They're just a room full of computers, high-end computers, that are connected by fiber optic cable to the rest of the world. They often have good security because they don't want anybody, you know, messing with these computers. So that would help the neighborhood, so to speak, and make sure that things are kept safe and sound. One issue that that we will definitely talk with GreenSpark about in more detail once Mr. Mazzella and GreenSpark have a deal is the mitigating any winter diesel runs that we have. Right now, I think everybody's aware that when the coldest temperatures arrive, Tai Lake does max out. They have a maximum capacity, and we have exceeded that just about every winter for the last 5 years. When that happens, we have to run diesel and make up the difference, or somebody goes in the dark. We don't allow people to go in the dark. So we burned some diesel. And where I'm going with this is the agreement with GreenSpark, as a large commercial customer, we have the ability to talk to them and sort out which direction they would like to go. Either pay for the diesel that we wouldn't have had to burn, or shut them off. Just curtail your use until that temperature rises up. And, you know, either of those scenarios results in no increase to the rest of the customers. GreenSpark is very interested in not being a burden to the existing customers of Petersburg Power and Light. They don't want to be in a negative light that way. And so they're very willing to talk and figure that out with us. Hasn't been figured out yet because there's no deal currently with Mazzella and GreenSpark. They're working on it. I believe they're gonna find some a path forward, but until that happens, we are not in a position to have that conversation yet. We have ample power, you know, in Petersburg. That 48,000 megawatt hours that SEPA spilled, that's power we can push to GreenSpark. In the wintertime, it gets tighter, of course. I just mentioned how we're gonna handle that. The rest of the year, we have ample power to serve this customer. One thing about the winter diesel generation, SEPA is now currently working on a project to add a third turbine at Tai Lake. That third turbine is going to add the horsepower needed in the wintertime so that we don't have to run diesel at all. They'll have the capacity to turn on that third turbine and hit those winter peaks without Petersburg or Wrangell having to burn any fuel to make sure that the lights stay on. That should happen. Their plan is to have that done in 2027. So that's just right around the corner. That's the bulk. There's one more sheet that kind of compares the past site use of a cannery to data center, and we'll go through that that graph or that table. But I just want to end to say that Petersburg Power and Light does support this project. We think it is going to be good for our customers over time. And I think it's a facility that many people in town won't even know it's operating. It's just there providing benefits to our customers all the time. So with that, any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Member Valentine.
Thank you. Good. I like hearing all of this. Thank you. Tons of questions, of course, because everyone wants to talk about this, and we may as well get ahead of it. Thank you for bringing it up early on so that the public can weigh in on this, and we can. It is a private sale. So the thing that I guess my first question is, what can the borough really do? I mean, can we set an ordinance that helps maybe mitigate how many data centers come to town, right? That, I mean, is that something we can do? Can I ask that quick question? Do we know?
Through the mayor.
Sure, I mean, the assembly can, you know, look at data center type ordinances. Won't apply to this particular situation, you know, at the moment.
But as a private sale, yeah.
One of the things about the data center thing, and Carl talked about it, it's self-regulating. There's only so much power available here to sell. You couldn't have an Amazon data center here that goes over 2,000 acres and has, you know, 5,000 servers. We can't produce that much power. Therefore, that's the limitation. You know, so any additional servers that GreenSpark would want to add down the road is going to be limited by exactly what our power production is available. So I don't know that'll be necessary, but it clearly the assembly could go down that road if they wanted to.
So, okay.
Let me follow up on that. I think this is self-limiting from the standpoint that you cannot have any more data centers here than you can produce power for, than we can, SEPA can produce power for. With that new generation, that's, even with the new generation, the one facility dedicated to Wrangell and Petersburg, it's limited.
What says that it's dedicated to Wrangell and Petersburg? You know what I mean?
The reservoir, the Taiyi reservoir, okay, is totally dedicated to Wrangell and Petersburg. Right. And so what that can produce, you cannot, whether that data center goes to Wrangell or Petersburg, it doesn't matter from the standpoint that you only have so much power to do. You can't without adding a whole new hydro facility and so forth. Would you say that different, Carl?
Just to answer the question, so an ordinance is not a bad thing on data centers. You know, this, the mayor and the manager are exactly correct that, you know, we have a self-limiting factor in Petersburg. This particular project is a square peg for a square hole, and it fits really well. But any additional data centers just aren't going to work here. So we should think ahead to that situation and come up with some language that might help us with that.
And that was kind of my question too, is like, okay, well, it is obvious that it's self-limiting, but I don't really know what Ketchikan's thinking. Maybe they want to put two, right? So like having a night, and then that puts the whole system under more load, right? But no, great. I'm just trying to see what we can do while we hear this presentation and what the public will come talk to us about and like what control that we can do, right? So anyhow, that was kind of one of the questions. And then the ordinance, and then can you give me briefly the numbers again? What is our max capacity for generating during the winter? Isn't it like 13 megawatts?
So, yes, right around 13.
Okay, and then?
And with diesel, and we have 2 megawatts at Blind Slough.
Okay.
So 15 total.
So 15 total, and that's max generation, and then during the, only during the winter months, during the really, really cold spell, do we even touch that? Maybe the two, right, 3 weeks, month, maybe, if we have a really cold spell.
Never been a month.
Never been a month, yeah. Okay. And then during the summertime, do you happen to know off the top of your head roughly what peak loads are for the summertime?
You know, just off the top of my head, I'd have to research as I go back and look at some data.
Yeah, I'd have to.
I think
Mr. Harbor might know.
Mr. Harbor's got it.
Through the mayor, so it is generally our peak load is somewhere around 5 to 6 megs during the height of the cannery.
Okay.
And it will drop down to about 3 to 5 right before and right after. And can I just make two real quick comments?
Yes.
Just to clarify. So, yeah, last year we did, SEPA did spill 48,000 megawatts, and it was very wet, but we average 25 to 30 megawatts spilled every year in and out. And then the other comment is, even with the third turbine, the plan is not to run that 24/7. It's there to pick up that peak load in the summertime or the wintertime.
Okay. And then I have the last thing. Sorry, I know this is multi for me. Sorry. Thank you for the numbers. Numbers are always good, just so everyone can hear them and know where we're at. And it also seems like this is also self-limiting out of a transformer, which is kind of, it sounds probably extremely expensive to have and to own. So 2 megawatts is kind of maxed for us, unless somebody wants to buy a really expensive transformer, another one, right? I mean,
well, if we had another data center company come in, or GreenSpark asked to expand, you know, we would put the brakes on,
right?
Because this situation is a service that's already set up.
Right.
You know, we've pledged, you know, 2 megawatts to this location, mm-hmm, for decades, and so, you know, we're going to honor that, and without any detriment to the system. If somebody else wants to come in, we're going to have to look at it a lot closer. and really determine, you know, where if a new service at this size for a data center is a good idea or not. And it probably is not, to tell you the truth. This particular data center, in my view, is probably the one that we're ever going to have.
Okay, thank you.
Member Martin.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. This may be directed more toward Andrew, but maybe Carl and Steve. I'm curious about the fiber optic load, if we'll have impacts on that. I know those aren't part of our utility, but I think that would be real important to the community to know if it's going to have an impact on our ability to access our own internet.
That I do not have any information about. That would be a Sam question. Unfortunately, he had another commitment that he had to leave.
And if I may,
go ahead, Andrew.
I'm in touch, of course, with, because it's a great question, and those are the same questions we look at as a developer, of course, on even on a house. You know, we're looking on how are we providing it with utilities. So all the utilities are important, and so I'm in touch directly, of course, with AP&T, Mr. Akers, and we'll have fiber optic, no problem from him. And I guess he'd have to, or, you know, the company would have to answer more specifically, but that has already been essentially approved, if that helps answer it.
Thank you.
Are there other questions from the assembly?
Okay. So this is the kind of the only time we get to talk about it, right?
Yep.
Because there's no, okay, yeah.
Okay, go ahead, member time.
Do you happen to know, Carl, or any or Steve, what didn't Wrangell have a similar meeting? Did you happen to know what they said on that?
I believe so. Okay. I think they had it. They had a meeting where Greenspark was invited to talk about various economic, well, the city and borough of Wrangell had a meeting about various economic development projects that were coming up, Greenspark being one of them. They were invited to that meeting and participated. And I think the talks are continuing, but it's a little bit different project in Wrangell. So in Wrangell, Greenspark is negotiating directly with the city and borough. So the tax base in Wrangell would have to participate in developing that project and getting that off the ground. Whereas in Petersburg, it's a private deal, you know, that the Petersburg borough is just providing power for. So right. I don't know exactly where those discussions are in Wrangell, but Greenspark has been talking to them for quite a while, and that's essentially the reason that Mr. Mazzella even came up with this idea to approach Greenspark.
Mm-hmm. I think it's good to state that out loud, because I think a lot of people in the community will try to compare Wrangell to us, because, you know, they're our sister town, and so to know the difference between us and them. And then I did have a concern of, like, if there's going to be a large amount of cables going to and from this. I mean, if it's AI, he kind of alluded to the AP&T is good with it. And then to note on what Mr. Hankins said, fire hazard is actually kind of like a big thing. And I would be curious if there's safety nets that you're aware of that could just do, you know, just like a sprinkler system. Not to say a sprinkler system would shut it off, but I'm sure there's switches and stuff that might be applied, especially with all this new technology. I'm sure there's some technologies that can help mitigate these batteries that would be used, you know, just in case there is a fire hazard, because I've had two houses of ours growing up burn, and it's not very fun. So it's, it's curious if you happen to know if any technologies that can help mitigate that.
I do not know.
Okay.
That is not something that have entered into our conversations.
Well, and I could, through the mayor, I don't think we should borrow trouble. We don't know what battery style that they're providing. Mm-hmm. That's a Sam question. And
yeah, he's not here.
It's
kind of hard.
Valid point. Something we need to ask, because it could impact our ability to serve it from afar. But it's not a given at this point. We don't really know what. I mean, I worked in a company that used old lead UPS batteries. That may very well be exactly what they're doing, which has, you know, it's a totally different issue. So anyway.
Steve, I believe you had a comment.
I was just going to say, we, through the mayor, that we don't necessarily know what the batteries and the fire mitigation that we may need. But they've been pretty good about everything else. That's something that we can lay out what they need. I do know with the big lithium batteries now, there's a lot of technology into shutting them down so that they don't get overcharged. Just like if you were to put it on your boat, you know, there's a lot of regulations to keep, or your insurance won't cover you, or Coast Guard will fine you if you don't have that instantaneous cutoff for issues. So there is technology to help prevent the fire, but we should definitely look into further if that's the style battery they use, how they plan on suppressing that. I think currently what I've seen is it gets submerged the whole time until it burns out, because as Aaron said, they create their own oxygen.
Okay.
Aaron?
Just to add on to that just a little bit. Those comments came from a conversation I had in a conference that I was up at in Anchorage, where other interior communities are discussing those types of UPS systems. Honestly, in my quick glance of this, if they were to use those types of batteries here, that's probably one of the perfect places for it, because it's out at the end of the pier, and worst case scenario is it all goes into the Narrows. Means hopefully it doesn't. We hope that prevents first, but we will not be able to extinguish that fire if it does occur. My concern is more directed at if more data centers were to come to town and they start looking at places close to downtown. If it catches, you know, it's big blaze starts and we have limited capacity to really, you know, put down all of downtown. So you might see something coming from us later in the future, trying to get ahead of those specific types of UPSs. I just wanted to bring it to your attention for your consideration, and when we hear from future plans. So,
Member Mucci?
Yeah, thank you. When I got back on the assembly back in October, Carl's got a smirk on his face because I've been in there all the time saying, hey, you know, the cell tower is something, but in the back of my mind, I can hear the data center thing. And in the last month and a half, I've been very clear that I don't want to go down the cell tower path here with the data center. And I appreciate the folks being up front with me, trying to educate me on how this works, and I still don't fully understand the whole thing. I've got a couple pages of questions, and I kind of wanted to go through them because people have been calling me for the last couple of weeks. And I think, you know, one of the first ones I want to ask is, Aaron just mentioned that this data center might be at the end of the pier, but as far as I understand, that's not the preferred location for this data center. Is that correct?
That's what I'm hearing.
Yes. And so where is the preferred location for this data center?
It's I'd actually like Mr. Mazzella to answer that question.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So there was an old, like we just said, there was a location at the end of the pier we are considering. I personally don't think you'd want to see batteries go in the Narrows, but that is one way to put it out. So we are also looking at an area right at the entrance to the pier, which currently is just an open area. It's unfilled because there was an old bunkhouse there right at the entrance to the pier historically that was on pilings. And so if we could build up that rock pad, there's kind of twofold reasons for that. One is we can really start helping Middle Harbor with some rock work, retaining walls, some really nice things there. Another big part of that is we could remove some of the power telephone poles, the first two potentially, maybe even three, and get rid of some of those overhead wires, which actually is also a fire benefit. So to answer your question specifically, there is a potential at the pier, but I think we're much more leaning towards directly on shore. Basically, if you were facing the pier directly to the left, which is just an open area now where an old building was on pilings. And if I may say too, since I guess this is all kind of related on the fire, Sam is definitely the expert on this. The number one thing with this and any data center, as everyone has kind of, a few people have kind of said, they do not want to shut down no matter what. So I promise you that whatever batteries, whatever the backup system is, you know, they have above and beyond probably anyone else's desire to not have an issue with that. And again, we haven't submitted final or even initial plans yet, although we are working on those. But when we submit for a building permit, it'll have whatever we're required for fire suppression. And again, Sam is the expert. I am a builder, but just like everyone, this is quite literally the cutting edge of tech. And so I'm learning as I go here. But I believe it's somewhat like a halo system we would use if any is required, which is, you know, for example, like a boat engine where it's a chemical suppressant. So we would ideally want to do something that was completely self-contained. And if there was an issue with the fire, no one else would even need to get near it. That would be my goal as a developer. And like I said, I certainly Green Spark in any data center is not going to want to have a fire at their facility as well. Although it's much point is well noted for sure. So,
you know, in the question was brought up about the Wrangell Assembly, and I've spoken to several Wrangell Assembly members, and I'm not going to paraphrase, but it seems like they're kind of at a standstill over there because they couldn't get community buy-in for the project, and it was a borough-supported project. You know, one of the conversations I had with Carl and Steve when I first got back onto the assembly is I was trying to figure out, okay, let's say we do get a data center. Somebody wants to put a data center out the road. What do they need? They need power, they need electricity, and some type of cooling system. So I'm thinking to myself, well, where do we put a data center that would be unobtrusive to the community, have very low impact to the environment, and would still generate electricity or generate revenue for the borough? And for me, this project here, it's a small project that's being done by private enterprise that will give us the idea to see how it fits in the community. One of the positive things for me is that we don't have to provide a lot of housing for people who are working on it. There's some technology opportunities for the kids up at the high school that we've been talking about that might be part of the educational system. When we're talking about this 2 kW transformer, and you're talking about your electrical needs, is that formula including the new hospital, the Skylark subdivision, the airport subdivision, and growth for Petersburg, or is that all part of the equation?
It is, yeah. So the presentation that Steve Harbor gave a couple meetings ago is excellent information. There's, as he said, there's 25 copies of that outside this door. I encourage people to read that. You know, we're planning on growth. Growth is going to happen. Electrical growth is going to happen in Petersburg, regardless of this project. And so that is part of the equation.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I've also been talking to Kodiak Electrical Cooperative, you know, trying to understand what they're doing. And they're doing something a little similar to what we're doing. And GreenSpark is doing that project as well. And in all the conversations I've had with people involved with GreenSpark is that they want to be a good member of the community. And for me, that's important because it took us a while to figure things out with the cell tower thing, and we're still not out of the woods yet, but I'm halfway optimistic that this would be give us a snapshot about if it fits for Petersburg and if there's other opportunities for it in the future. And they have the equipment. They're not asking us for a lot except for power. And what's important to me is that if there's a way to keep the rates down for community members and to get rid of that diesel surcharge in the winter and in the summer, I'm all for that because I'm going to ask again about that tonight about that diesel surcharge because it just bugs me that we're the only community paying for it. And if there's a way to get rid of that, I'm all for that. So, yeah, I'm kind of excited about it. I'm kind of nervous, cautiously optimistic, but we'll see. I appreciate Carl and Steve kind of being up front and, you know, trying to answer all the questions that are out there because there's a ton. There's a ton of questions. Thank you.
Any other questions from assembly members? I have one that was asked earlier, Carl, you might want to address. And that has to do with the very low flow years that we've had when we 2018, if you remember. But we might want to talk a little bit about how we fix that issue on power.
I sure can. So for starters, we did have a drought year. 2018, 2019 was really dry, and the lakes definitely dropped in a hurry. But that lesson, or that event, taught us a very valuable lesson. SEPA shifted their operations plan dramatically after that event. And so now what is in place at the SEPA level is what's called an operational band. It's a lake level. It's a guideline, and it's going to be hard for me to explain it, you know, without a picture in front of me. But basically, it allows Petersburg and Wrangell, who is dedicated the power from Tai'i Lake, to take the power they need. If there's excess power available, then that can be dedicated to Ketchikan. And that those power sales to Ketchikan is important because, you know, that's more power that we sell at Tai'i. Again, it helps keep that wholesale rate low. If we don't sell any power out of Tai'i to Ketchikan, then we spill more. We have an issue with basically the economies of that project. So selling power to Ketchikan is not a bad thing at all. Selling too much power to Ketchikan is what happened in 2018, 2019. There was no check on that. And so when the lake got too low, Petersburg and Wrangell were burning diesel for months to make up the end. So was Ketchikan, by the way. Everybody was doing it because there just wasn't any water. But now how it works is that Ketchikan will be sold power out of Tai'i Lake as long as the lake level stays above a curtailment line is what it's called. If the lake drops below that curtailment line, then SEPA stops selling power to Ketchikan. The effect of that will be the lake level will rebound. You know, it'll come up because Petersburg and Wrangell don't, you know, use as much water. And so when the lake level rebounds to a point where there's excess power again, it gets sold to Ketchikan until it hits the curtailment line again, and then we stop. And so all the water that's underneath that line that's remaining in the lake is all power, adequate power for Petersburg and Wrangell. It's a safety valve built into the operation plan that is genius, I think. And Robert Seidman, the current CEO, was an engineer for SEPA at the time. He came up with that plan. It has worked well, very well. And it protects Petersburg and Wrangell on the north end of the system from Tai'i Lake getting too low. It is really a very good way to operate that lake.
The only other thing I'd add to that was the fact that if you look at the hydrograph on that over the years, there's only been, I think, 2 years since that reservoir has been in existence where we've had that problem. But that protection mode was put into place just to take care of that kind of a situation. Member Schwartz, you had a question. Jeff.
Yeah, just you know, back to the transformer that is there now. So do those things just run forever, those transformers?
No, they don't.
Okay, and so what's the integrity of the current one?
It's in good shape. At one time, as Mr. Mazzella talked about, I've been talking to him for a year and a half, trying to figure out if that transformer could be used by the utility for some other facility, because he just wasn't using the capacity.
Sure.
And so we were trying to figure out if it made sense for the utility to gain access to that transformer, supply him with a smaller one that would, you know, fit the need that he has right now. So we did some testing on it, and the testing came back great. You test the oil, and those oil tests tell you if there's any issues with that transformer. You know, certain metals show up, tells you that there's degradation. There's insulation value in that oil that's important to note. And all the tests came back good. So that transformer does have a lot of life left in it.
Okay, so if the transformer was to fail, who pays for a new transformer?
Mr. Mazzella.
Okay, and so just to be clear, if this project works for GreenSpark and they wanted to add another transformer there to increase the size of their data center and the footprint that they have, you would recommend not doing that?
I would not recommend doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions from assembly members? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hagerman. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank
you. I'm going to move on here to, I'm going to go through the mayor's report and so forth, and then we'll take a break here. With that, for the mayor's report, this is National Safe Boating Week Proclamation. The Borough Assembly received a request from the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary Flotilla 17-01-04 to issue proclamation recognizing National Safe Boating Week, May 16th through the 22nd, 2026. The request underscores the importance of boating safety in Petersburg Maritime community and notes that most recreational boating accidents result from human error, including alcohol use, operation inattention, and lack of education. The attached proclamation, which we will talk about later, promotes the life jacket use, boating need education, adherence to navigation rules, and engine cutoff switches to reduce accidents and save lives. Thank you, Mr. Floyd, the flotilla command, as the flotilla commander for Petersburg, bringing this proclamation forward. The proclamation is attached to the agenda, and we very much appreciate that, to bring that attention of all our publics. The second item I have tonight is that during the week of March 16th, I traveled to Juneau. At that time, I met with all the Southeast legislators. And then I also had a chance to talk with the Southeast Regional Department of Transportation head. And then I talked with the head of ADA, the head of Alaska Finance Corporation, the Alaska Finance Corporation, during that week. It was interesting for me. I'm not going to go into a lot of the details, but the meetings gave me some opportunity to advocate for a wide range of our projects here that we have here, including the Mitkoff subdivision, the rural health transformation funding. I could talk a long time about a couple of these things. The delays in senior benefits that's being seen here in Petersburg, harbor maintenance funding, sea otter management, and restoration of the $2 million for the appropriation for the Tai'i third turbine. I also raised the issue of completing remaining land transfers under the municipal entitlement program. Well, in Juneau, I also, as I said, I met with ADA, and we had a chance to talk about funding for other projects that we possibly could do here in Petersburg, and I think I got a much better understanding of their process and what they can do. And I, manager and I have been talking about some of those here, particularly related to housing development and some of those things. So whether some of that will work or not, I don't know, but it's worth, you know, exploring anyhow. And with that, I'll move on here. I want to remind the assembly particularly that we have budget work session on the public, that will be on at noon on April 29th. So if you put that on your agenda, and it's the purpose of it is to go over the draft budget, which I believe that the finance director gave a copy to everybody today. And then at that point in time, you have a chance to ask questions. You have the packet in hand so you can review it now and be able to ask any kind of questions you want. And the last item I have on here is the Planning Commission vacancy. The borough is accepting letters of interest from qualified assistants to serve on the Planning Commission through the October 2026 municipal election. Applicants must be registered borough voters and residents for at least 1 year. Letters may be submitted to the clerk's office in person, by mail, or by email at beregula@petersburgak.gov. And if you have other questions, you can contact the clerk at 907-772-5405. There is no manager's report tonight. And with that, I propose that we'll take a 5-minute break. Thank you.